And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And if it is the third Tuesday of every month from 3 to 4, it's the Divorce Show Part 2. And, of course, Joe Collins, great family law attorney, Collins and Collins, really my favorite. There's no doubt. I've known you 10 years. Joe, welcome.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
I am good. What does it say? Old something.
Old guys rule.
Oh, I like that. And you look different from last month, and describe the listeners how you look different.
Well, I'm good looking as always.
There we go.
You know, my son was giving me a hard time. There's this joke at the high school for No Shave November. And so, you know, he being 16, I told him I could grow one faster than him. So I can't seem to grow a full beard. Well, I can grow a full beard. It just itches. I don't know if anybody out there has ever grown a full beard, but after a while, it just itches real bad. So, you know, so I got a little goatee and mustache, you know, trying to keep up with you there in the with the mustache.
It looks good, though.
I appreciate it.
Right, know. Tommy? Look at a goatee.
I got to keep up. Tommy, he's got the mustache there.
Oh, you have a mustache.
Yeah, get you the little handlebar mustache is what we need to get.
Yeah. So. Oh, I think that'd be good. Don't you think so? I like it. So Collins & Collins, a great law firm, concentrating heavily into family law, which is very important.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a big impact on people's lives nowadays. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, and during the holidays, do you notice maybe more clients calling you or after the holidays? I mean, I think if people are thinking a divorce, I think they also think it through. I'm just guessing, but you could tell me.
No, most people think it through.
They don't do it before the holidays.
No, you don't get a lot of new clients during the holiday period, but you do get a lot of problems that come up during the holidays that usually need to be addressed, you know, visitation issues, things like that.
Oh,
what do we do with Thanksgiving? Or the order says this. I don't understand that. What's that mean? So you kind of have to work through a lot of those things. So.
You know, I even saw in a divorce decree once, not from you, but from, I forget, a client long ago, and their attorney said they didn't divide it by day, you know, like, you know, half thanks, you know.
Right.
From up till one, you're with the mom, and then the nighttime, you're with the dad. They said once you break the wishbone, you go the dad's.
Really?
Yeah. I'm kidding.
That's unique.
Wouldn't that be funny, though? Break the
wishbone. Hang on to that wishbone, then, if you don't want the kid to go
I
over,
wish so. I'll be at my dad's.
There you go. So yeah, that's interesting. No, most people, if they get along and they don't have any issues, it's, you know, we'll split Thanksgiving or we'll alternate Thanksgiving or you'll have them Thursday and I'll have them Friday or something like that. And, you know, anybody that's got family, and everybody has family, you know, we spend Christmas or Thanksgiving usually eat with my parents, but then we have a separate family Thanksgiving dinner in my family.
So you do.
We have the extended family on Thursday, and then usually Saturday or Sunday we have myself and my kids have another Thanksgiving dinner. So I get two Thanksgivings every year.
Hey,
so.
That's not bad. You're looking forward to
that's
it?
No, that's not a bad deal. It's looking forward to it this year, and that's kind of what I tell parents about Christmas time. You know, okay, Christmas. Your kid really going to complain about having two Christmases?
Yeah.
You know, you have one with mom, one with dad. I don't see a kid complaining about that. So.
Yeah. Well, so without telling anyone, even though we have a reach of 4.5 million people here, what turkey do you like best? The one on Thursday or the one with your own family?
Oh, the one with my own family.
Because they cook it differently?
No, because it's with my own family.
Oh, there we go. And you get leftovers.
You got to remember. You got to remember my family, though. My mother and father had 11 children. So now that most of us are married and have children of our own, it's 40 or 50 people over. Oh. It ain't just one turkey for Thanksgiving.
You must have like
lunch.
Six.
Oh yeah,
or 10.
Yeah. Well, the year we only have one or two, we don't get enough turkey. So
oh my gosh,
you have to complain a little bit to get more turkeys cooked. So
they must start cooking like days in advance.
Well, you know, I'll bring one, my sister will bring one, my brother will bring one, and. So we all cook it that morning, but we all bring it over. So
that is so cool, though. Huh?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. If you ever want to see an interesting dinner, it'll beat anything on TV. So come on over; we'll show you what Thanksgiving should be like.
You have like big tables.
Three. Or? Well, this year we're going to do. I think we're doing it outside, and we're going to put three long tables together. So
wow,
40 people, you got to line them all up.
Do you watch football?
Nah, not so much.
No?
You know, we're not a big football family, but, you know,
there's
always a game going on somewhere. So.
Wow, that is so cool. I think that's really awesome. So, anyway, you've talked over the months many different issues. Custody issues has been big. And what's some of the other things you've talked about?
Oh, child support, custody, division of property. You know, there's just so much out there. But you know, the big issue I want to talk about today, it's a kind of a serious issue, is domestic violence.
Yeah,
that kind of permeates everything. It permeates custody, and it can negatively affect someone's life for almost forever. So,
wow, really?
Yeah, it's a tough issue. I mean, anybody that's ever suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's a common mental issue that arises from wartime. Those people that suffer from domestic violence can have post-traumatic stress disorder. So they can, for the rest of their life, be affected by a single event that occurred early on.
Wow, that makes it very difficult. And that's tough. And I bet let me just sort of guess here. When you hear the word domestic violence, it sort of, well, you know, it could be a scary two words, domestic
oh, yeah.
violence. But I'm going to guess that there's degrees. I bet anywhere from, and you could correct me if this isn't the case, from, you know, being accused of that, but maybe it didn't happen, to very serious assault charges, to everything in between, maybe just verbal type of things. Am I right about that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There are degrees. The major issue, or the at least the damning or damaging issue that you have with domestic violence, is that domestic violence comes from somebody you're in a relationship with. So you're not going to have domestic violence from a neighbor. You're not going to have domestic violence from a coworker. It's always somebody that you're in a relationship with.
Oh, I see.
It's by somebody who has, this, statistically speaking, more women are victims of domestic violence than men.
Oh, really?
And you have, usually it's a controlling behavior. It's not, you know, somebody's getting slapped around or anything like that. But usually it's domestic violence is a spouse, usually a husband, because I think 2/3 of the victims of domestic violence are women. So it's usually a man who tries to control his wife. And sometimes, to be perfectly honest, I don't know that I'd call it domestic violence, but sometimes men don't understand what they're doing when they start controlling what their wives do and don't do, who they see and who they don't see, and those type of things. But those things are seen as domestic violence. Those are issues that need to be addressed.
Really? So it's not even any physical thing, you're saying, is that if you're starting to control someone's activities and restrict their ability to make choice, is that domestic violence?
Yeah. It's Ooh. Well, that's difficult for the legislature and the law to kind of define that, because when you have domestic violence, there's two basic areas. You have domestic violence, the criminal aspect of it, and then you've got the domestic violence as it relates to family law. And so what they've done is they've tried to define acts or things that constitute domestic violence. Usually emotional abuse is a very difficult thing to go to court and prove, the controlling behavior. So if you want to go to court and get an order of protection, which is usually what people get when they suffer from domestic violence, you kind of have to prove an act. And so the statute goes and it tries to define what domestic violence is and those different acts. And again, it ranges from what you've said all the way from homicide as being an act that can be domestic violence down to a simple abuse or a simple assault, criminal damage. You know, I kind of laughingly sometimes say, look, you can be convicted of a domestic violence offense by damaging your own property. Well, you know, like breaking a lamp at home that you own. But if you're in a fight with your spouse and you grab the lamp and you break it and that damages the property, you could be convicted of domestic violence and an offense of criminal damage by damaging a property.
Wow.
Especially if you own it.
Wow, that's sort of weird, isn't it, that
yeah,
part?
Yeah, that is kind of weird. So, you know, if you get mad and decide to punch a wall, better be careful. That could be considered a domestic violence offense, and you could be convicted of criminal damage. And when there's a criminal offense, they can designate it a criminal offense with a domestic violence component. So that kind of gives you extra sentencing or punishments.
What makes it criminal? What's the criminal element of that?
Well, it's an intent to do harm or an intent to damage property.
So
especially
intent
property.
Is the key.
Sure, intent. Well, with any criminal offense, intent generally is the key. There's different levels of intent. There's negligence, but it's not just regular negligence. You have to have either gross negligence, intoxication to a degree where you have a disregard for human life. And so negligent homicide is usually what occurs when you have somebody who drinks so much and then actually drives and somebody dies. So that's the easiest way to kind of explain that intent. That's not a specific intent, and it's not an intent.
But it's a disregard for human life.
Right, but it's a disregard for human life.
Ew.
So, you know, I've never really seen anybody have a negligent assault on somebody. Usually it's an assault. And they try to plead, well, I was drunk, so I didn't mean to beat her up, so to speak. But but that one I've never seen fly. But, you know, it's that intent. What did you intend? And if it's somebody that you're in a relationship with, a spouse, a boyfriend, girlfriend, somebody that you've lived with, somebody that you've married, then it becomes domestic violence, which is much more serious than a regular offense.
It's interesting. As you were talking, what came to mind was the founder of McAfee. Have you been following that?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening, but I guess he had a dispute with a neighbor. I think he said the neighbor may have poisoned McAfee's dogs, I believe it was. Oh. And then all of a sudden, the neighbor is found dead somewhere, and McAfee is on the run. That's all I heard.
And wow, sounds like O.J. Simpson's, you know, back.
Yeah, and in fact, the Discovery Channel has something on O.J. Simpson saying that there's a serial killer on death row that may have actually committed the murders. Who knows? Yeah, I saw that today. Isn't that funny? Anyway, all these are reported in the McAfee thing. It's in the news. I may have gotten, hopefully I got close to that, but it is something that's going on. Let's take a quick break, and I will ask you a question, Joe, about a he said, she said situation. I bet you see that a lot.
Oh.
And that's a tough one, but, you know, during the holidays, we don't want any violence anywhere. That would be nice. Celebrate what the holidays really mean is what I'm thinking. And, of course, we have Joe Collins, the divorce show. Great, great family law attorney, Collins and Collins. We'll be right back. And now, one of my favorite attorneys, Joe Collins. You have a great firm, a family atmosphere with great sophistication.
That's my dad's kind of theory when we started. He always kind of touts himself as the old country lawyer. We pride ourselves at having somebody answer the phone. You don't have a computer system answering it. We try to give personal service.
Tell us a little bit about the firm in terms of where you focus your attention.
We probably do 60-70% family law, and we really enjoy it. Family law encompasses such a wide variety of topics. But, you know, for the most part, you feel rewarded that you're helping somebody out. Family law is probably the most rewarding.
Why don't we give your website out?
It's real simple, collinslaw.net. The email's just the same, joecollins@collinslaw.net.
602-788-7227. Call Joe. Collins and Collins, great family law attorneys and more. Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches. 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And if it is the third Tuesday from 3 to 4 to the Divorce Show Part 2, Joe Collins, great family law attorney, Collins & Collins. Hey, we should give out your number right now. What is your number?
602-788-7227.
So 602-788-7227.
Yep.
That's an easy one to remember.
Yep. I've had it for 15 years, so.
Wow, nicely done.
I wouldn't remember it otherwise, so.
Yeah, I like it. Now, before the break, I was going to ask a question here. Actually, after the break, I'm asking the question about he said, she said. I think people may have been caught up in this situation. One person calls the police they both call the police at the same time, and they go, oh, this person, they're threatening me or whatever.
I'll answer your question, yeah. And I'll raise you one. How's that?
Yes, I like it.
We have, he said, she said is always a huge issue, especially when you get into threatening and intimidating, because that's a criminal offense in Arizona.
It is?
Oh, yeah. You can be convicted of criminal threatening and intimidating. However, let me ask you this question. How many people do you think who have been a victim of domestic violence actually report it?
Oh, you know, I bet it's very low percentage. I'm going to guess, less than 25%.
Well, see, that's the trick question. How do you know what's unreported?
Oh, yeah, so. That's a good point. Oh, that was a good one. He got me, Tommy, on that one.
But you got to understand, the problem with domestic violence is just that, because many times domestic violence occurs between people in a relationship. So those people in a relationship usually love each other, and they don't want their spouse to get in trouble.
Yeah.
So it either goes unreported, or if it gets reported, it goes unpunished or undealt with, to go along with the theme. It's not dealt with in an appropriate manner. So usually the perpetrator doesn't seek help or doesn't get any help for the problem because he doesn't see that there's a problem. All he knows is that they got in a fight, and usually they blame the victim. It's your fault because you got me mad, or you did whatever you did. And you know, I had a when I was a kid, and I think I've mentioned it before, I was 16. My dad was an attorney in Utah, and we defended a young lady who had killed her husband. And she had, on numerous occasions prior to killing him, had been beaten by him. And so when he came home that evening, they've been together for 10 years. She knew his triggers, his moods, the things. And that's usually the spiral, or what occurs with a victim of domestic violence. They know that the perpetrator, when it's going to get set off, when there's going to be a problem, because they've been around him so long, they just understand when it's going to happen. So he came home, he was angry, upset. She knew the beating was coming, and she killed him to prevent the beating from occurring. So it's only been recently, in the last probably 10, 15 years, that many states have accepted the battered woman syndrome, which was the defense we used in that case, as a defense. She was a victim of domestic violence. She had been hurt, beaten many times, never reported. The policeman called out so many times, but she never ever said, he hit me, because she loved and cared for him. And the problem you get with a situation where it ends in death is usually the victim is the one that kills the perpetrator, and then they suffer so terribly from guilt because they cared and loved about that person that it's very difficult for them to deal with it.
So how did that case turn out?
Well, in the end, she ended up pleading guilty to manslaughter and did 1 year in prison with a number of different conditions of probation, including counseling, and she got help. Was that a jury trial? No, she pled guilty, so there was no jury determination that case. She actually admitted guilt. There was a negotiated plea with the prosecution in that case.
But if you think about it, I would guess that if it's a jury trial, they're going to be a little sympathetic maybe to the
Well, it really depends, on who you get on the jury and what their attitudes are. I think the biggest problem we get with domestic violence is it cuts across so many different socioeconomic and age class. There really is no profile, so to speak, of a victim of domestic violence. You can't tell me, okay, it's this social economic class, this age, this particular gender, or this particular race, or whatever. It just cuts across. I've met people that are very wealthy and very educated, and they've been victims of domestic violence, and I've met kind of the other spectrum, not so educated and not so wealthy, and they've been victims of domestic violence. There really is no particular profile that you can point at and say, there's a potential victim.
So do you get calls just on that? Not so much, I mean, separate from a divorce action, but domestic violence action?
Well, in a domestic violence case, there's a number of issues. Usually the victim of domestic violence, they share a child. So there's custody issues. So that's why I say it permeates that custody issue.
Gotcha.
And the statute says that if there's significant domestic violence, the court can't award joint custody. Then you also get other issues. Frankly, if you have been assaulted by your spouse, you can sue your spouse for personal injury. So,
really?
Oh, yeah. It used to be way back in the day, before, obviously, the suffrage of women and you know, they had dowry and the woman was considered property of her husband. And way back then, there would be no – you could never have a spouse sue. But that has been eliminated, obviously, in this century. Actually, in the 1900s, it was eliminated. And you can sue your spouse for personal injury. So if there's and then a lot of insurance companies clued into that, and they have exclusions under homeowners policies that for paying out claims between spouses that live in the same home. But you can get a judgment against your spouse for personal injury during the time. If he's assaulted you or injured you in any way, you can do that. Now, there's always a collectability issue, but I've known a lot of victims, even if the guy goes to prison for the rest of his life, who will sue that perpetrator, get a judgment against him, and usually it's non-dischargeable in bankruptcy because there's punitive damages associated with it, and they can hold that judgment over his head for the rest of his life.
Wow. So this is some good information for people. And
sure.
There's some information here. It says one in every four women will experience domestic violence in her lifetime. That is a lot.
That is a lot of people, yes. And that's why those are estimated numbers based upon what they believe occurs, even with the non-reporting. Through counseling and through those kinds of things, they find out that people have been victims and never ever reported it to law enforcement.
That is huge. An estimated 1.3 million women are victims of physical assault by an intimate partner each year. That is huge, too.
Yep.
Wow. So do you see a lot of this in your practice?
Oh, yeah. You see a lot of it. And many times the victim doesn't want to talk about it. So you've almost got to pull it out of them. You know, when I interview people for a divorce case, I always bring up the issue of, you know, has there ever been any domestic violence between you? And a lot of times, you know, you kind of get a sheepish no or a yes, and many people will lie about it because, again, they're embarrassed. The victims feel like they're the ones responsible for the violence that occurred. They're not responsible, but that's how they feel. They feel like they're the ones that caused it.
Look at this one. The cost of an intimate partner violence exceeds $5.8 billion each year, $4.1 billion of which is for direct medical and mental health services. That is huge, too. So that does show there's a lot of physical damage being done.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, what can be done? I mean, it's, you know, that maybe that's a question for Dr. Sharon, who is driving right now.
Yeah.
But I mean, isn't that, is it just tougher laws? Is it, or do, after someone gets convicted or not, I mean, are they required to go to therapy? How does that work?
Usually with a domestic violence offense, you're required to attend counseling or something to try to address the issues that caused the domestic violence. I think education is an important part of it. Educating both men and women as to what domestic violence is, how it occurs. By the time somebody has a criminal conviction, usually the damage is done at that point. The money's been spent on the physical assault or the physical injury or whatever. But I think, you know, education is important because I think sometimes we don't realize what we're doing and how we're hurting those that we love. But the problem we get, or the problem I have with education, sometimes it doesn't work. I mean, usually a perpetrator who's convicted of a domestic violence offense, a lot of times they'll take a plea so they don't have to go to trial and get a stiffer penalty. Or if they go to trial and they get a penalty and then they ended up doing some jail time and then they go to counseling, how much do you think that person actually listens in counseling? If you're forced to go to counseling, is it really going to do you much good?
That's a good point.
There are some people that it does do some good, and people do learn. You know, not everybody is uneducatable, and you can actually teach some people some things. But there are some that just go, you know, then they go to a group session where what do? They complain about their spouse during the whole time. They really don't learn or benefit from the counseling at all.
So the listeners out there right now, I bet some of them, because of the high stats here, are wondering, you know, what they should do. I mean, what would you tell them if they live with someone, you know, male or female, and they're subjected to some type of domestic violence, and they're just accepting it. It's hard. I mean, what would you tell them?
Well, I'd tell them to get help.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't have to be. You don't have to leave your spouse. I mean, you don't have to. You don't have to end a relationship over this, because I think people are willing to change. I have met people that have realized that their behavior is unacceptable and leading towards domestic violence, that change their behavior. I found an article in the Arizona Republic from a number of years ago. It was this year, June of this year. It talks, you know, there was a lady, and she says, here are some of the signs that you look for. And she kind of put it in a question-answer period. Your partner controls everything. Your partner calls you names and yells at you. Your partner shoves, pinches, hits, punches, kicks, or otherwise hurts you. I mean, that's a different spectrum. Controls everything you do. If that is what your partner's doing, either he's very controlling, or he cares about you and wants you to be do what's right, or be good, or whatever, and he thinks that that controlling behavior is beneficial to you. But he's got to realize that controlling behavior isn't necessarily a good thing. So that's what I'm saying. If you catch it early, if you can get it and say, hey, look, this may not be good for us. You can't control who I see. You can't control the money that I spend. Although there needs to be some control, I think, jointly in a marriage.
Sure.
But I think there, when that starts to surface in a marriage, we need to seek help. We need to get somebody like Dr. Sharon involved and say, how can we fix this? Because, again, they think they love each other. When it gets to the level, there is no reason a spouse, a person, should hit, push, kick, shove, whatever, their spouse. No reason whatsoever. That is an unacceptable way to deal with any problem. It's not acceptable for kids. You don't see, okay, let's see, in elementary school, we're going to teach them how to push and shove each other.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a class that we teach kids. Why is it going to be acceptable when we grow up? It's just not. So if that's occurring, something needs to happen to stop that before it gets into a bigger problem. And then there's, you know, one, does your partner destroy your belongings? Take things from you, hide them, destroy them. I mean, that is a way of controlling or attempting to hurt somebody else. You know, if you've got a favorite, I don't know, teddy bear. I'm sure you probably have a favorite teddy bear, Dave. You never know.
I have my favorite teddy bear.
Right? Somebody were to take that, tear it up.
Ooh.
Boy, that hurts your feelings.
Oh, man.
It's the same
thing. I'd have to get a new teddy bear.
Right.
And a new partner.
Probably. You know, so that's just things to look for. And if you can stop it early enough and get help, the answer may be to leave that relationship. But, you know, hopefully it's not. And there's a lot of wonderful organizations, both in Arizona and the United States, that can help these people. And if it is to the point where there is physical harm occurring, there are places that you can go. There are a lot of shelters and places that you can escape from such a terrible relationship. If you are in that terrible relationship and there no other choice but to get out, the Chrysalis Center, the Sojourner Center, there's a lot of places. Google it. You know, look in the phone book. Go to the courthouse and say, I need help. And they'll find you help. They'll get it for you.
And there's another reason, if you think about it, is this. Another stat. Boys who witness domestic violence are twice as likely to abuse their own partners and children when they become adults. So think about it. You're a role model. So if I noticed you said he a lot, but it could be she control people too.
Sure.
But the thing is that I would say, you know, if you don't want to do it for you, do it for your kids. In other words, don't teach your kids this is acceptable.
Right.
Because you might be giving them a sentence in life, like they're going to have some issues, possibly.
How does a boy learn to treat his girlfriend, his future wife, his spouse? He learns it by looking at his dad or looking at that male role model in his life. He's going to learn how to treat other women by how his father treats other women. And it's the same with girls as well. Girls both learn how they should be treated by how their dad treats their mom.
Mm.
They learn how they should treat men by how their mom treats their dad.
Yeah.
So those role models are so very important, and that statistic is chilling. I mean, it really is. It's very, very problematic. If you think in a cycle between families over time, what are we going to have? What we're going to have is more problems. More violence, and more divorce.
Yeah, there's no question. This is very amazing stats. And let's take a quick break right now And we'll, when we come back, we'll continue our discussion. We're talking about domestic violence. We're going to talk about protective order protections and those type of things. We have Joe Collins in studio, great family law attorney from Collins and Collins, and we'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Hirschberger Assisted Living Home for the Elderly. Whether it's a need to recuperate after surgery or just need daily assistance to enrich their life, you can trust that your loved one is being well cared for. Our caregivers are fully licensed by the Arizona Department of Health. An experienced team of professionals provide expert medical care, including physical, occupational, and recreational therapy, wound care, medication management, nutritional support, and personal care. All faiths are welcome. Hirschberger Assisted Living Home, founded in 1997, will provide your loved ones a quality of life with loving care. Call Shirley Hirschberger today at 602-314-6937. That's 602-314-6937, or visit the website ahomewithshirley.com. Hirschberger Assisted Living, home is where the heart is.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the divorce show every Tuesday from 2 to 4. 2 to 3 is Dr. Sharon, and 3 to 4 is Joe Collins, great family law attorney from Collins and Collins, great attorney, 602-788-7227. You've had that number 15 years, and I remembered it.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, I wrote it down.
Outstanding.
I still remember it. Anyway, we've been talking about domestic violence. Some of the listeners right now may think, are they a victim of it? Maybe they're the ones that are doing the domestic violence, and they're not sure. Under any circumstance, if you're not sure, listen. This, in fact, all Joe's shows are archived on breakradioshow.com under the divorce show. Definitely look at that. Because we've had a lot of great topics over the months, and that's www.breakradioshow.com. Go to archives, go to Divorce Show Part 2, and you will see the or listen, be able to listen to all these great shows. Now, if someone's not willing to get help, or there's nothing else they think they can do, there's one last thing legally they can do, and what is that?
Well, you could get an order of protection, and there's a number of different, you know, there's orders of protection, there's injunctions against harassment and injunctions against harassment in the workplace. So there's three different kind of things, and I think we focus mostly on orders of protection because that deals with domestic violence. Basically, an order of protection is a civil order from a court that prohibits a particular person, a specific person, from making any kind of contact or coming near or at your work or home or school or other locations. And there's a few criteria. There has to be some kind of relationship, married at one point, living together at one point, or have a child together. And it's issued by a judge, a police officer, a process server, sheriff serves him, and it's good for 1 year.
Wow.
So what it does is, and I think the theory behind the order of protection is it keeps people apart so they can kind of calm down and just learn how to not be around each other. It's usually an order of protection for 12 months works. Very infrequently do you have orders of protection that are renewed multiple times. Hopefully an order of protection is obtained early. It stops the contact. I mean, if there's animosity and people are continuously fighting, they just need to be apart for a while. And most of the time that settles things down. It calms it down. It allows people to kind of think about things and get past their issues. Sometimes they've got to renew orders of protection multiple times, and their problems never get solved. But it keeps them apart. You go to a judge. Tell them what's going on. Usually they want to look at what's happened within the last year. They don't want to, if something happened 10 years ago, isn't necessarily going to be able to get you an order of protection. But if an act of domestic violence has occurred or will occur, you can get an order of protection. An order of protection can give you exclusive use and possession of your marital residence. Oh. So many times someone will get an order of protection. It'll be served upon the spouse, and the spouse will be out on the street that night. So they're immediately removed from the home. They can return with a police officer on one occasion to get personal items. A lot of times police officers will give you 15 minutes to get your clothes, your toothbrush, and you're done.
There's a movie about that. It was called Love Stinks.
I've heard of it.
It's a funny movie. Huge. I think it's more towards the male. But he had this girlfriend, and I forgot her name. Is there a Bridget Wilson married to a tennis player? I think so. Very cute, and it was just a girlfriend.
Yeah.
She got an order of protection, kicked him out of his own home, and she didn't even own it.
Right. Seen that happen frequently.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, yeah. Pretty harsh, huh?
And he only had 15 minutes. It's a funny movie, actually. You should everyone watch it, but it's a little pro-male, I would say. But what I understand is that if someone files an order of protection before a judge, judges usually grant it, because I don't think they want the liability. I mean, then you have time, don't you, the person that gets the order against them, to go ahead and say, well, we don't agree or something.
Right.
How's that work?
Once you've been served, any time that the order of protection is in effect, so it's good for a year from service, any time in that year you can ask for a hearing. You can ask for it the first day, the second day. I mean, I had a client, they got an order of protection, and they said that, he's a gun-toting nut, and he stockpiles food and ammunition, and I'm afraid of him. And got an order of protection, got kicked out of his house, couldn't go back, had 15 minutes to get his clothes. We requested a hearing, went in front of the judge, and the judge dismissed the order of protection because there was no basis for it.
Really?
So I don't want to disparage any judge for issuing an order of protection when there isn't a basis for it.
Right.
But usually when an order of protection is issued, and many of them are denied, but usually they're only hearing one side of the story.
Yeah.
The person that's going in and talking to the judge. So it's not, there's no due process. There's no opportunity for both sides to be heard. You can request a hearing. The court must set it within 5 days if the residence is involved, 10 days if it is not involved. So if you're kicked out of your house, they're supposed to set it in 5 days. Sometimes they don't because it's just the court's so busy they can't get it in that time period. But many times they set it within the 5-10 day period. You go to court, present your evidence, judge makes a decision.
What if you have your business in your house and your spouse gets that order? You have 15 minutes to get your clothes. You can't get all your files or your computer. Can you have an emergency hearing? Have you seen something like that?
And if you have, yeah.
What happens?
You wait until a court can get you in. And you better hope you win, because if you lose, you'll be tough out of luck. There really is no exception. Unless you agree, and there's some stipulation about getting your property, you're not getting it. You need to file a separate court action to get your property.
Now, if this was what they call, what, malicious prosecution? Is that when it's a sort of a bogus?
Right. Yeah.
Can you sue the spouse?
Sure, but you have to file a separate lawsuit and prove damages.
Oh, my God. What, that is a nightmare. So what's the meaning here? The meaning, in my opinion, let's see what you think, is watch who you marry.
Well, yeah.
Be careful.
And be careful who you marry, but, orders of protection are misused. I think they're properly used more than they're misused, but don't do anything that can be construed as domestic violence. I'm not saying don't argue. I'm not saying, don't try to control finances or don't try to discuss things with your spouse. If you're happy in your marriage and your spouse is controlling, but you're good with that and you're happy with that, don't go get an order of protection.
Yeah.
I'm not here to bust up a marriage. I don't want somebody to say, Mr. Collins on the radio said that you're controlling and therefore that's domestic violence and you're out of the house.
Right.
Let's be clear here.
Yeah.
If there's clearly issues and you need to go get an order of protection, get an order of protection, but don't misuse it. Don't abuse it. I know people that get orders of protection and try to put the kids on the order of protection. It's not a custody order. It's not supposed to be used as a custody order, but they'll get that order of protection and they'll keep the kids away from mom or dad because the order of protection is in place. I've seen people right before Thanksgiving, right before Christmas, they'll go get an order of protection because they want to have a happy Christmas.
Oh, my.
So they want the spouse out of the house. They want the boyfriend out of the house. So they go get the order of protection. They know the court's not going to be able to set a hearing until after Christmas. So they have a good Christmas. Now, if you've got a valid reason for an order of protection, if there's been abuse within 12 months, go get it, get protected. Now, you got to remember that order of protection is only a piece of paper, though. It is not a bulletproof piece of paper. It doesn't stop someone from punching you if they want to or hitting you. So if there's domestic violence, make sure you have a safety plan. Don't say, I know a lot of people that have been hurt and some even killed with an order of protection in hand.
Oh.
So make sure you have a safety plan in effect, something that you can do or go to if you feel you're threatened. If he's been served with an order of protection and he comes over violating it, dial 911, go to a friend's house, have something in place. But yeah, that order of protection can be misused quite frequently. And a lot of people, unfortunately for kids, unfortunately for families, it can be abused.
What happens to the person that violates the order of protection?
Well, first of all, depending on their conduct, the first violation is what they call, it was on the tip of my tongue and now I forgot it. It's violating a court order. You can be charged criminally for violating a court order.
You can?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I actually wrote it down. But anyway, it's...
Can you go to jail or something?
You can. It's possible to do interference with judicial proceedings, they call it. So you can be charged with violating court order. Go to jail, possibly, be fined. It's a domestic violence offense if it's an order of protection, so it would be domestic violence at that point. Then if what it is that you do, is aside from violating the order of protection, if you trespass, if you commit an assault, if you do something like that, then you'll be charged with that as well, and that'll be a domestic violence offense.
Oh, my.
It doesn't take much to be convicted or to commit a felony. And a felony can run you anywhere from 18 months to life in prison.
Oh.
So, like I say, don't commit domestic violence. Learn to live with it. Go stay with a friend until you get it resolved legally.
Now, how about you have kids? Let's say you get an order of protection. You get kicked out of your house, but you have kids. How do you see your kids?
At that point, you can file a paternity or action or a divorce action in Superior Court.
Oh.
And they will deal with the visitation issue. And usually what they'll do is they'll have something put in place with the order of protection. So they'll say, look, we're not going to have the kids on the order of protection. And I have seen orders of protection that have kids on them. People have committed acts of domestic violence against their kids. And I'm not talking about just spanking them and kids upset because their dad punished them. I'm talking they've actually committed acts of domestic violence against their kids. They've been violent with their kids. But if that's not the case, the court will fashion some kind of remedy so that the person who has the order of protection can remain safe and protected while the other party can actually see the kids. Sometimes they'll use a third party to do exchanges so they never have to see each other.
Wow.
Sometimes you have to pay a third party to do exchanges. Sometimes they will have a curbside pickup and drop off. You can come to the house, but you stay in your car. The kids are old enough and big enough they can walk down to the car by themselves. They don't need any help, so there's no need or reason for the spouse to come to the door or the parent to come to the door, knock on the door, and have any interaction with the person with the order of protection. So they have curbside pickup. You know, sometimes kids are old enough they can take themselves back and forth, but that's kind of a rare occasion. By the time they hit 17, 16, they're pretty much doing their own thing anyway. So
I've heard and I've seen people in the past where one of the spouses, as revenge, because they're mad, maybe one of, you know, let's say one of the partners cheated or whatever, and they get an order as a revenge motive just to make their life hard. Have you seen that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
What is there? Is that a crime to lie? Well, to,
sure, it's a crime. I mean,
but how do you prove
talk
that?
Talk about perjury or lying. But here's the problem. It's a he said, she said many times.
He said, she said.
Talk about threatening and intimidating. I had a client who was accused of, threatening to kill the spouse. She went and got an order of protection. We asked for a hearing. He came in. He denied it. Said, I didn't say that. She said he said that. Judge kept the order of protection in place.
Wow.
They were never married, so I take that back. It wasn't a spouse. It was a boyfriend, girlfriend. Yeah. They had a child in common.
So, but you've probably seen others where the judge said, hey, not enough evidence. And then is that a problem for the person that originally did the order? If they lose it, is that a criminal offense?
Well, it can. Well, no, not if they lose it. There's no order or...
No, I mean, let's say they said something the judge said when on the hearing. Yeah, I don't believe this order, so I'm going to release it.
Well, you have to understand, for a criminal offense, there has to be some intent to say something that's untrue. And to prove that is very, very difficult.
Yeah, I bet it is.
You're talking about perjury, and the county attorney is the only one that can charge perjury, so it's very difficult to prove. It's not charged. Very rarely will a judge refer a perjury case to the county attorney for prosecution. So usually, and if you ask most judges, people actually don't commit perjury. They believe what they're testifying to is actually true.
Yeah. They could be hallucinating.
Well, either
or
hallucinating,
they could be delusional
or exaggerating. You know, he didn't really say that. I just understood that he said that. It can be really, really difficult to interpret what they intended. And if we prosecuted everybody who lost an order protection hearing, their courts would be even more clogged than they are now.
So. Now, let's say you had a client. They get the order protection from, let's say, the spouse, the wife, let's say. And he has 15 minutes. He gets his clothes. He's obeying everything. And then she said, well, and they make up. You know, at least, have you seen that? And
well,
what? And
do you frequently.
So when you see that, though, you better go to an attorney and terminate it formally. Am I right?
Oh yeah.
Or else,
either an attorney or somebody, better go terminate that order of protection.
That could be a problem.
They better go back to that judge and say, "Here, judge, I have an order of protection. I don't need it anymore. We've made up." And their judge's going to ask you, "You sure? What's different now than it was 3 days ago when you were in here telling me it was beating you up? Now, why are you wanting to?" They're going to make sure that order, that there's a reason why you don't want that order of protection, you know, and so they'll usually, they call it quash it, they'll usually get rid of that order of protection, but they're going to make sure, sure, that, you know, that's what you want.
So have you seen a case where it was a pretend makeup just to get this guy to violate it, and then she, you know, she was pretending the
makeup?
Well,
and you frequently hear this. Okay, there's an order of protection. Says you can't contact me, but they start calling them.
Yeah.
I have the order of protection, and I'm going to start calling the one I have it against.
What happens there?
And usually, I'm not, and you always say, well, you could violate your own order of protection. Well, that's not the case. It's still a violation of the order of protection, but people get sucked in all the time. Oh, I'm just calling about the kids. I just want to talk to you about the kids. Then what do? They hang up the phone, they call the cops, and they say, oh, we were just on the phone. He was
and
calling.
That happens?
Oh,
yeah. My gosh. Can you believe this hour went so quickly?
Are we done?
Wow. Joe Collins, a great family law attorney, 602-788-7227, 602-788-7227. Joe Collins, and that's Collins and Collins. And thank you so much. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll talk later.
Yeah, thank you. Everybody have a great Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you tomorrow. Breakthrough Sports. A lot of sports action, and everyone have a great night.